Capra versus the Cook County Board of Review. Mr. Silva? You need a moment.
This is a marathon performance of the kind we don't often see. So.
Thank you. And may it please the Court. There are three issues before this Court in the Capra appeal. Whether the District Court's grant of immunity to the individual members of the Board of Review was correct. Whether the Court erred in ruling that the plaintiff had failed to state a claim for a violation of the right to equal protection, and whether the plaintiff had failed to state a claim for violation of procedural due process rights. Without taking this Court through another discussion of immunity, the District Court was wrong to deny plaintiff's equal protection claim because the plaintiff did not plead examples of other similarly situated properties in the complaint. However, not even under the heightened pleading statement requirements of Iqbal and Twombly was the plaintiff properly required to enumerate similarly situated properties, because the question in this case was not whether there were comparable properties to Mr. Capra's property or identical properties, nor was it whether these properties that could have been out there and were out there were given exactly the same rate change. The plaintiff's property was one of four properties in the entirety of Cook County that was treated differently. And it was treated differently. They were treated differently, not for any rational reason, but for an illegal animus. The comparison does not have anything to do with square footage, the rates of occupancy, improvements to the property, the value of the improvements, or any variable that affects properties, the value of properties in the real estate market.
I think that's right. But the real threshold question, since we're here on the pleadings, is whether that's identifying a comparator has ever been thought to be a pleading requirement, and there's no support for that.
We, in fact, explicitly rejected it last year in the Jynoski case, said you do not have to identify comparators in making a class of one equal protection claim. That's Jynoski against City of Chicago.
It's just one way of proving the claim. And I have a question, too, about of a threshold nature, about whether this is really a class of one kind of case. And maybe it falls within that genre because there's no suspect class. But it seems to me we've got a class of a bunch of property owners who are connected to or thought to be connected to Representative Frelich by way of campaign contributions and other illicit connections, and then everybody else who has appeals before the board. So it's a classification of a group of people as opposed to just your client.
Well, yes, Your Honor.
I'm not sure the analysis is any different.
Yes.
We're still looking at improper purpose and rational basis, but...
Yes, Your Honor. That's precisely it. The plaintiff's property was one of three others that was improperly singled out out of an illegal motive, merely because of a suspected association with the pariah Illinois State Representative Paul Frelich. And again, in this case, as in the other, the district court, Judge Coleman, erred in ruling that there is the availability of a post-deprivation remedy at the state level or in PTAB, which we have argued at length in our briefs. There is no adequate remedy at the state level for the deprivations that occurred in this case either. Assuming arguendo that plaintiff did go to the state level for a post-deprivation remedy.
That questions the way that the remedy is actually working or not working or has been politicized rather than whether the remedy exists. I mean, I think we have to accept as a given that there are post-deprivation remedies here, a multitude of them, it seems to me, including another layer of administrative review, plus review in the circuit court and all the way up through the state court system. So your argument goes to, you know, whether it can be trusted or not, but that's not a legal argument. That's a political argument.
Your Honor, perhaps this will, we will go into this in our briefing of the McNary case, but we would argue that these remedies, and we have attempted to argue in our briefs, that it, that these remedies are not adequate safeguards. They're not real remedies. In this case in particular, that there are no adequate state remedies at the state level.
And Ms. DeSilva, this question really goes to both the Saktar hospitality case and the Capra case, but are there PTAB appeals pending in both of them?
In Capra, there is one appeal pending, I believe, Your Honor.
Okay. And in that case, did you make any allegation of red flagging or anything like that?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. So if we tell the district court you've got to proceed on this case, there's every possibility that while the case is proceeding, the PTAB could resolve the appeal, rule in favor of Mr. Capra, and what happens to the federal case?
Oh, I'm sorry. There is a – when I said there's a PTAB appeal, I believe that PTAB appeal, and I have to double check, it's an important point, is a, of a different year and not this one that's before
well,
this court.
Why couldn't you – surely we don't want to get into a situation where the PTAB is reviewing 2008 and the federal courts are reviewing 2009. What kind of a system would that be?
Your Honor, this year in particular is the relevant year because it was in this year that, in the year that is being appealed, that all of this happened, this story of both cases in Saktar and Capra. It probably doesn't apply in the other years, and we have no proof that it did.
Mr. Silva, you seem to suggest that there's a limitation or the absence of relief in the Circuit Court of Cook County.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, that's a court of general jurisdiction. Now, I appreciate some of the allegations that, when I say appreciate, I recognize what you claim might be inherent conflicts of interest with members of the state judiciary. But is there any reason at the outset to preclude that possibility that this suit could not, not review the necessarily the tax implications, but the challenge to the constitutional or lack of constitutional protections you suggest exist, couldn't be brought in the Circuit Court of Cook County, and whether we ought not to, in the first instance, recognize the uniqueness of that constitutional court?
Your Honor, certainly the plaintiffs, well, if they had decided to go to state court and argue their constitutional deprivations, and it is not that plaintiffs' counsel or appellant's counsel is wearing tinfoil hats. The New York Times actually did a story about the slating process in Cook County, and it is not, again, we're not arguing that the earth is flat or 6,000 years old. It's not unreasonable to suspect that if one of the main defendants in this case, Joseph Berrios, is vice chairman of the Cook County Democratic Party's Judicial Slating Committee, and the chairman is Ed Burke, that there is a presumption of, and is responsible for slating over half of the 442 judges at the circuit level. Perhaps in when a case is called, there's an owing or a slight, the appearance of a bias that in order for the plaintiffs to go to state court, they have one, maybe perhaps one chance to, for an automatic substitution of a judge. Then what? How many more chances do they get? Do they have to find the 100-something so judges that weren't slated directly by one of the defendants in this case?
Would you like us to declare the Cook Circuit Court unconstitutional?
No, Your Honor. And again, we really aren't and don't normally appear to be wearing tinfoil hats or alleging unbelievable things. This is actually true.
Would you like us to declare it unconstitutional?
No,
or
Your
not?
Honor, but it is the reason that the plaintiffs came to federal court. And they're not required to have gone to state court. They could have. under Hemmer come to federal court, and they did.
Well, my inquiry wasn't on the issue necessarily of whether you could have come to federal court or not, but just on how limited the potential relief is in the Circuit Court of Cook County. That's all. From at least a theoretically.
Yes, theoretically, they could have, in theory, go to the Circuit Court. But what we argue is that it's doubtful. Well, PTAB does not hear constitutional matters, and to raise them in Circuit Court, they would have to be raised in the context of the Board of Review's tax decision, and there was no evidence given for that tax decision. So
that sounds like automatic reversal to me in the administrative review process and the petition to the Cook County Circuit Court if there's absolutely no factual basis for the decision that was made under the applicable legal standards, then you should win very quickly.
Well, Your Honor, that's possible, but I don't know that I'm not a property tax lawyer. I don't know that's the case. There's a presumption given to the Board of Review, the presumption that they're correct. And we
well,
have
right,
to
but
defeat.
If it's true, as you allege, that there was no real adjudication that went on, all that happened was they reversed themselves because of the publicity without regard to the facts of record about this property, then that's not something that any reviewing court could ever defer to, even under a highly deferential standard of review.
Your Honor, I don't know.
Mr. Silva, I need to ask you about something in your brief in the Capra case. At page 10 of your opening brief, you said, referring to a Sixth Circuit decision, in Watts, the court declined to extend absolute immunity due to three factors affecting the administrative court at issue there. The procedures the court followed did not protect litigants sufficiently, precedent was not followed, and the reviewing court had to confine its review to the record produced before the administrative court. Most importantly, however, a fourth factor, the board was not isolated from outside political influences. And you cited pages 279 and 280 of the Sixth Circuit's in-bank decision. What you cited was the dissenting opinion. And in fact, the majority decided exactly the opposite of what you told us in your brief was decided. I'm very troubled.
Your Honor, I don't know how that happened.
It's the kind of thing that undermines credibility a great deal.
Of course.
Please proceed.
Actually, Your Honors, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Silva. Ms. DeGrand.
Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel, may it please the Court, I'll be arguing the equal protection and due process aspects of our CAPRA argument, of our CAPRA case, and given the fact that Mr. Bertocchi has covered, in some detail, the immunity issues as part of SACAR, he'll come back up and answering the Court's questions on the immunity issues, if the Court please, and any questions the Court may have that are directed specifically to the Board of Review. But we do, of course, contend that the Haida case and the absolute immunity end the matter, certainly as far as the individual defendants are concerned, and we also have our argument that's been presented as to the Board. As to the Court's questions about the issue of due process, the plaintiff, it's not 100% clear, at least it wasn't clear to me, and I don't think it was clear to the district court, whether the plaintiff was attempting to allege a substantive or a procedural due process claim. According to the pleading, it seemed to hinge on what the plaintiff called was a denial of the 2010 appeal or a refusal allowed to a petition is referred to differently in the complaint. The plaintiff claims a denial of a liberty interest. And I think regardless of whether the court views this as the allegation of a substantive due process problem or a procedural due process problem, the same insufficiency requires dismissal because the plaintiff only can speculate as the inadequacy of a PTAB appeal. One of the specific questions or one of the specific points that counsel made was that none of these issues could be raised in the context of a PTAB appeal, and I know of no prohibition against raising any of these issues in that context. Certainly, and I believe the plaintiff concedes that they could have been brought in the context of an application to the Circuit Court of Cook County, which is a remedy that clearly is available to Mr. Capra.
Is PTAB authorized to decide constitutional issues?
I don't believe that that's something that PTAB commonly does. I don't believe that there's any prohibition against them being brought, and certainly any decision by PTAB would be appealable to the appellate court and potentially to the Illinois Supreme Court. So there's no prohibition against it, but I don't believe that it's commonly done. But, of course, if the property taxpayer was concerned greatly about that type of an issue, then it would seem to me that the logical place to begin an appeal would be in the Circuit Court of Cook County rather than PTAB. But there's no prohibition against it that I'm aware of.
Would you have to raise it at PTAB before you went to the Circuit Court?
Whether there'd be a waiver argument, possibly.
If I could follow up on an elementary question. If you go to PTAB, is the next step to the appellate court or to the circuit court?
Appellate court.
Okay.
So PTAB is a state
if you want to
body.
If you want an opportunity to build a record, a trial record, you could do that in the circuit court.
You're going to have a much more, that's correct, Your Honor. You're going to have a much more formal record, I believe, in the Circuit Court of Cook County. Interestingly, this aspect of the plaintiff's claim has, and that is whether there is an adequate state remedy or whether there's some sort of deprivation of due process, has nothing to do with the allegation of some sort of retaliation or punishment for an association with Representative Frelick.
It is linked. I mean, the argument is that the pre-deprivation process utterly failed because of undue political influence.
But
there was no actual adjudication on the facts that matter, which is to say evidence about this property, and it was completely politically tainted. That's the argument. So
the pre-deprivation process.
The process at the board.
Correct.
Right.
I agree
that there is a process, and that's the pre-deprivation process, and the argument is that was completely meaningless here and failed because it was utterly tainted by politics and had nothing to do with the merits of the claim about this property value. Presumably PTAB would entertain that sort of argument?
I would think so, Your Honor, and I think I'd make two responses to the point that Your Honor is making. And one is that the statement or the allegation that there's no basis for the decision by the Board of Review other than this issue that's out there about Representative Frelick and some sort of punishment or, you know, attempt to show clean hands by making the plaintiff a scapegoat. The only factual allegation that the plaintiffs offer on that is to say, well, the property taxes were, or the assessment was lower previously, so the fact that you subsequently raised it necessarily means that. And I don't think that's a proper allegation. I don't think that meets the plausibility test.
Oh, I think it meets the plausibility test. The question is whether, you know, it's otherwise cognizable under our procedural due process jurisprudence. But I don't think there's a problem with plausibility here, considering the allegations and the complaint in their totality.
Well, then the point that the case that I would cite would be the Michalewczyk, I'm not pronouncing it right, case where the court looked carefully at the question, and I think that the issue of whether there is a post-deprivation remedy and even the sufficiency of the pre-deprivation remedy focuses to some extent on the post-deprivation procedures and what are the procedures that are in place to remedy any problem. I mean, I think that the district court was correct in looking at this and saying we have to focus on the post-deprivation procedures because this is a sort of...
Right, and that was the import of my previous question about whether PTAB or the circuit court would entertain the kind of claim
right.
that is at issue here, that there was a complete failure of due process because this was a thoroughly political decision.
I think that the post-deprivation procedures unquestionably are adequate. And there hasn't been anything other than the speculation that there is a politically infected circuit court of Cook County and that there's some sort of red flagging, which was never at all defined at all in the complaint and what that means, how that there could be some sort of control by the board or the individual board members over an appeal is a question that's completely left unanswered by the pleadings.
That's why I asked it here, because when there's a 12B6 dismissal, plaintiffs do have an opportunity to elaborate on and explain their allegations on appeal.
And I understand that, Your Honor, and it seemed to me that commentary continued on the largely speculative route, and, you know, what is the factual basis to support that? On the equal protection issue, I see my time is short. The court raised a question about whether there should be any issue of allegations about comparators in this type of an equal protection claim. We cite the Labella Italia versus Winnetka case that I think raises that issue and lends some support to our argument. The other factor that the district court seemed to find quite significant in the other case that the district court seemed to find quite significant was the Enquist case, which said should an equal protection claim lie where you have a situation like this where there are so many discretionary, individualized decisions in the instance of the Board of Review, hundreds of thousands in each year, and can you isolate the information that, or can you look at that procedure and say this is an appropriate equal protection type of situation or appropriate situation to be able to bring that kind of a claim? And I think the answer to that is no. And I think
well,
the district court
was a categorical ruling. These kinds of decisions, employment decisions, are categorically outside class of one equal protection doctrine. I don't understand the district court to have engaged in that kind of analysis here. I thought it was just a pleadings analysis that there aren't comparators alleged, and so the complaint fails.
Well, she raised it, or rather the court raised that point, and what the plaintiff said on reply was Enquist has no application outside the public employee context, and that is not the case, I'd submit, under this court's precedent in the Srail case. In which it engaged in that type of analysis when there was no employment situation. So if the court has no further questions, I will thank you for your time and defer to Mr. Bertocchi.
Thank you, Mr. Grant. Mr. Bertocchi.
Thank you, Your Honor. Since immunity didn't really come up in the second argument, and since I have no desire to continue to swim against the tide today, I will address some of the questions that came up when Mr. Grand was here, and in particular addressed the notion of how the claims the plaintiffs make, the constitutional claims, might be addressed on appeal in the two remedies in state court. Certainly you could do it in the circuit court. You can raise those issues in PTAB because PTAB is empowered to correct the record based on any claim, and of course you could end up in court.
It is de novo, is that correct?
It is de novo, but more to the point, and this goes to Judge Sykes' question about the nature of their claims and their challenge to the pre-deprivation procedures. It may well be that they have claimed that the pre-deprivation procedures entirely broke down, but what they do say, if you want to read all of their complaint, is that as a result of that, the property tax assessment for that property was set arbitrarily or based on bad reasons. If that's the case, regardless of whether you're claiming that because you just disagree with the way the real estate market is going or because it was something unconstitutional, PTAB and the circuit court both have complete authority to correct that problem. They can set, and the plaintiffs aren't claiming, and they're, of course, not entitled to skip their property taxes. They say in their complaint and they say in their briefs that it was set for an improper reason. PTAB can set it for a proper reason, regardless of whether it's constitutional grounds or other. They have complete authority, and the circuit court, of course, does, except that the circuit court's even better because the circuit court can't raise them. PTAB could actually increase them on its own. So in that sense, regardless of the nature of the pre-deprivation remedies, the post-deprivation remedies are completely adequate to deal with these plaintiffs' claims. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, Mr. Brefacki, while you're here and while Ms. DeSilva also has an opportunity to respond, I just want to say, with respect to supplemental briefing Fair against McNary, I've looked, and I don't find a whole lot of interpretation as to what's a fair, efficient, and speedy remedy under McNary. There is case law under the Tax Anti-Injunction Act, 28 U.S.C. 1341, and I would invite you all, at the risk of stating the obvious, to consider those cases in your briefing. Thank you.
We will. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Mr. Bertocchi. Ms. DeSilva?
Thank you. First of all, we do apologize to this court for our mistake in citing the Watts case. The PTAB is not authorized by its regulations to look at constitutional matters. Is it prohibited from doing so? That's unclear. Perhaps not by explicit prohibition. But again, the district court erred in dismissing this complaint because there may or may not be the availability of post-deprivation remedy does not make the deprivation at the Board of Review level acceptable. And furthermore,
is that because you have to pay the taxes first? Why is it unacceptable?
Because there is a presumption, Your Honor, that the prior decision is right. And that goes to the point of why, with PTAB, and for that matter, the Circuit Court, according to the, as we cited in our brief on citing the Illinois Administrative Code at 86.19.10.63b, under the burden of going forward, the contesting party must provide substantive documentary evidence of legal arguments sufficient to challenge the correctness of the assessment of the subject property. Failure to do so will result in the dismissal of the appeal. That is simply not de novo.
Is the statute required to be de novo?
Well, the statute suggests that it's de novo, but it isn't de novo according to the Illinois Administrative Code. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Our thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.